Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another News in Focus program. I've asked Bill Sturm to join me in reviewing an article that I think is pretty important, Bill. And one of the reasons I think that I even chose this article is because of the author.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he just has so much credibility with me. I kind of think that, I mean, I've seen this whole issue in a couple other articles, and I just ignored it. But when I saw who wrote this article, it drew my attention to it. So talk to us about the author.
Well, Wayne Grudem, I know him because I have a very exhaustive theology book that he has written. I know him as an author. I don't particularly know where he's going to be preaching this coming Sunday. Or I don't really know much about other than I've watched apologetic films from him, and I have read several of his books.
Yeah, he's a research professor at Biblical Studies at Phoenix Seminary in Phoenix, Arizona, and the author of Politics According to the Bible. And I think, Bill, you introduced that book to me.
That's right, yeah. That is a really helpful book. It's I bought it for, I think, $29 at Lifeway, and it has not only a topical index and table of contents that's more relevant than most that I've come across, but it also has a very helpful scriptural index in the back of the book, so that if you want to see if there's any political relevance as far as Grudem is concerned of the passage you're preaching on Sunday or for Sunday school you're teaching it or whatever, you can look in the scriptural index. Very helpful, good quality textbook type quality book.
Yeah, and it's not a book that you have to read the entire book. That's not the idea. It's a reference book.
Right.
It's something you put on your library, and every time you have an issue and you're wondering, does the Bible address this? Or I need to brush up on this. It's really an incredible resource. And I tell you, Bill, I use this theology book probably once a week. It's just such a good reference for scriptures that maybe I hadn't thought about, scriptures that I need to add to my discussion. We're doing the tongue study right now on Sunday nights, and I've read the chapters that he has on that. And I would commend the politics book to anyone who's serious about deciding for themselves, is there really a difference between Democrats and Republicans, and does the Bible speak to these issues?
Like what issues? You know, we'll just name a few.
Like, should the government be giving large quantities of money to people?
Right.
In the form of entitlements. Is that biblical? Is that how we should be doing business?
He even talks about genetic duplication, cloning.
Right.
I mean, everything that you're thinking, there's probably a moral middle ground on it. He tries to get to the scripture and solve the issue. When does life begin? When does a person qualified, if you want to say that word,
should we go to war? When should we go to war?
Yeah, just war.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it just goes on and on. I have it on my iPad because of the ability to digitally search. I like that fact that I can just search for phrases. And if you have a Kindle out there, I would commend the book to you or the hard copy. Bill likes to write in his books, and so he enjoys the hard copy. So let's get into the article, Bill. Introduce the first paragraph.
This Sunday, this was posted October 7th, so yesterday. This Sunday, I have agreed to join nearly 1,500 pastors nationwide and participate in Pulpit Freedom Sunday, sponsored by Alliance Defending Freedom. In my sermon, I plan to recommend that people vote for one presidential candidate and one political party that I will name. We will then all send our sermons to the IRS.
Now, I don't know why, Bill, the article does not mention what church he's pastoring. I tried my best this morning to see if I could find anything on the internet. The best I can come up with is Scottsdale Bible Church, but he's not the pastor of that church. Maybe the senior pastor is turning the pulpit over to him. I read somewhere that he'd served as an elder, but even on the list of elders, he wasn't one of them at the current time. I'm not sure. But one thing's for sure, the article doesn't say it, Bill, but we know the political party is going to be the Republicans, and we know the candidate is going to be Romney.
Sure.
There's no question about it. We'll show that to you in the article. The reason I wanted to do a podcast on there is because a couple weeks ago, a broadcaster on sermonaudio.com suggested, Bill, that there were no differences between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, that there were no differences, that it was an illusion to think that there were differences. And in just a moment, we'll introduce the listener to a significant paragraph describing the differences.
This action is in violation. This this recommending presidential candidates and political parties is in violation of the 1954 Johnson Amendment to the Internal Revenue Code, which prohibits tax-exempt organizations like churches from endorsing any candidate by name. But in our nation, a higher law than the IRS is the Constitution, which forbids laws abridging freedom of speech or prohibiting the free exercise of religion from the First Amendment.
So here, let me explain to the listener what the objective is. The objective of this civil disobedience bill is these pastors, these 1,500 pastors, want the IRS to take away their tax status. So they then, in turn, can petition the Supreme Court. They want to force the issue so that a case is brought before the Supreme Court to overturn this IRS rule. And until the IRS enforces this by taking away a church's tax-exempt status, there's no reason to petition the Supreme Court because there hasn't been a violation of their rights, so to speak. So they're trying to force the hand of the liberals or the IRS to give them ammunition to then file a grievance with the court. I think that they know they're going to lose the grievance, and so they're not going to force the issue. The IRS will never force the issue. The idea is we can hold this threat over your head, so to speak, and most pastors will not do anything like this. And so even if one day 1,500 do it, so what? We still have this overarching control.
Yeah, okay. I fully understand that many pastors might never want to endorse a candidate from the pulpit. I've never done so before, and I might never do so again, the author says. But that should be the decision of the pastors and their churches, just as it was in 1860 when many pastors rightly decided they had to tell citizens to vote for Abraham Lincoln in order to end the horrible evil of slavery. When the government censors what pastors can preach, I think it is unconstitutional violation of freedom of religion and freedom of speech.
You know, it's interesting, Bill, the number of parishioners, members of your congregation, that until you spell it out, they don't hear it.
And then some still don't hear it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it really is something like, you must vote for Abe Lincoln to end slavery. That level of specificity. It's amazing the degree to which people don't make the connection points. Even though you're implying or you're suggesting, or you're showing them the two issues, and you're expecting that you can connect the two points, they don't.
I just want to say that this is so encouraging, especially when you grew up as I did. I'm trying to replay your history in my mind. I know that I grew up in churches that were committed to the last day syndrome. That America's going down the John and there's nothing you can do about it. And here we have 1,500 churches representing at least 1,500 people. You know,
yeah.
Or I should say 100 times that. So at least 150,000 people we're dealing with. All of a sudden we have a lot of Americans that are willing to say, look, civil disobedience, we're going to do this the right way, force their hand.
It is encouraging, and by way of your numbers, Scottsdale Bible Church, if that's the church he's getting to speak at, is 7,000, Bill.
All right, so we're up to 156.
We sure are. It's a pretty significant number.
I was going by that figure you've thrown out there a few times, that
yeah.
The average church runs 50 or so.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Because tax regulations cannot be challenged in court unless someone is first found in violation by the IRS, it seems to me that intentionally disobeying for the purpose of bringing the issue into the court system is a way of being subject to the governing authorities, as Romans 13 tells us to do. This is the only way under our governing authorities that a tax law can be challenged in court for being in violation of our Constitution.
Which is precisely why, Bill, I'm telling you right now that the 1,500 sermons that are going to be mailed to them are going to be tossed in the trash can, because they don't want to lose their oversight here. They don't want a Supreme Court to rule that the law is unconstitutional. They don't want that to happen.
Seems like I heard a figure that there are around 25,000 to 30,000 Southern Baptist churches in America. So if you start, if you take just all the denominations and you take 1,500 away, what, you know, who cares, basically?
Right, right.
You know, you still have 100,000 churches in America that you're going to keep quiet on political issues. Interestingly enough, I remember Jeremiah Wright and other pastors like him pre-election 4 years ago. They were using their pulpit without any shame, without any double take, and no one said anything in the media about tax exempt status and.
So, no, you can endorse the current president all you want from the pulpit.
It's you can have Michelle Obama preach on the healing of Jesus.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's no issues whatsoever.
Yeah. I have compiled, the author continues, a list of 24 differences between the two parties on issues with a moral component. Here are some of them where the parties differ.
All right, this is what we want to unpack, Bill, because, again, I'm recording this podcast because there was a suggestion on Sermon Audio that there is no difference between the political parties, that they're all the same. So let's see if this is true.
All right, number one, the rule of law versus judges who changed the original meaning of the Constitution.
Okay, so on one side, the Democratic side, these are judges who don't have any problems with changing the original meaning of the Constitution. And Grudem here is suggesting that on the Republican side, there are judges who will be strict adherents to the Constitution.
And this is a no-brainer. I've already looked at the voting guide, both put out by the Christian Law Association and also, or not the Christian Law Association, but a Christian Law Association, and also the local Board of Elections. And this is right down the middle for the judges, for the circuit judges, for the Court of Appeals, for the state Supreme Court. It's right down the middle. It's very clear that on one side, they don't mind legislating from the branch and calling the Constitution a living document, which means you can change it.
Yeah, absolutely. That we are a lawmaking organization as much as the Congress is a law. And this bench that you gave us to arbitrate now becomes a means whereby we can change the law.
Right, yeah. Freedom of religion in public expression versus freedom of worship in private.
And there's no doubt that there's a concerted effort by the Democrats to eliminate God.
Right. Yeah. Protection of life versus glorifying and unrestricted abortion rights.
Well, again, look at the Democratic National Convention. Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood had keynote spots. Leaders from why in the world? How does a member of Planned Parenthood get a spot at a political convention if your party is not making it abundantly clear that we're the abortion party? Think of Democrats, think abortion. Think abortion, think Democrats.
It's just as overt as us sticking the non-public speaking Clint Eastwood behind our podium. You know, the dude wasn't there because of his political prowess. No. He was there because of what he stands for.
Right. Absolutely.
So very clear message here. The preservation of marriage versus promoting same-sex relationships as marriage. We've done so much on that.
We didn't even talk about it.
No, the limitation of federal power versus an unconstrained federal government.
Yeah, okay, big government versus small government. How big do you want your government to be? And don't forget, the bigger your government is, the greater your tax burden has to be. There's a direct correlation there.
Right, and then with the ever-decreasing public sector, when they do see a small increase in jobs created, then they take that as a good thing. Well, the truth is you have less of a public sector to survey because everyone else is still at the glorified udder of government. Parental choice in education for children of all income levels and all races versus protecting a government-regulated monopoly on schools.
All right, Bill, we saw this at the debate that occurred just last Wednesday, in which the president specifically said, I want to hire 100,000 more teachers. All right, the federal government doesn't hire teachers. That's not what the federal government does.
Right.
Local school boards hire teachers. And to think, all right, 100,000 new teachers. Let me do my math right. 50 states, that's 2,000 teachers per state. He acts like that's some gigantic number. 2,000 teachers per state. You divide it up by, let's just say, for the sake of discussion.
40 counties.
Right, 40 counties. It's not that big of a deal. But it sounds like a huge number when you're in a debate and you're speaking to a national audience. But the logical question is, where's the money going to come from those 100,000 teachers?
Right. And then a secondary question on the heels is, why is that not a state issue?
Right.
Why are you sticking your nose down in North Carolina's business?
Yeah, and we'll take it a step further. I would submit to you that it's not even a state issue. That the education of children is a local issue. We
of course.
Have school boards.
Right.
And every regional component should be there. So that if I, Bill, don't like the liberal infiltration in my local area, I just pick up and leave Massachusetts. And I move to a more conservative part of the United States. If I don't want my kids hearing about homosexuality, gay parades, and all those kind of things, I have two choices in Massachusetts. One, go to a private education. Three choices. Two, homeschool. Choice number three, move.
Or four, vote the bum out, right?
Enough of them.
Yeah, and here's the interesting thing that I've come across with that is that I'm looking for a school board thing to run. I mean, look, no one runs for that stuff, and fewer vote for it.
That's right.
And so,
right. So it's not that hard to get elected,
no.
Bill.
And it works in the same way that capitalism works in a non-regulated free enterprise system. If, let's just say, John Smith, whoever that is at Huntington Parish in Louisiana, and he sees that his education statistics and his graduation rate stinks, and he looks next door to, you know, Cucamonga Parish, and they've got a 80% graduation rate. Well, either he's going to feel compelled to catch up, or they're going to vote him out. They don't
right.
want their kids being
right.
stupid, and the people in the next parish, next county over being smart. So it works the same way as free enterprise when you leave it down at the local level. Competition is good.
It says, parental choice in education. I want to grab one more quick issue. Did you hear, Bill, about in California to where the reparation therapy is now illegal?
Yeah.
you as a parent, your son says, hey, I feel some same-sex attraction, Dad, and I'm confused about it. And you say, son, we're going to get you into some counseling. We're going to work through this. You're only 11 years old. You know, you shouldn't be having these feelings right now. That is now illegal. You can't do that in California.
Mm.
That you don't have the right to say that those feelings are wrong and we're going to take you to a pastor or to a counselor and move you through a seminar or a series of classes or some training to get this out of you and to redirect you into a heterosexual attraction. We want you, son, to discover that girls are cute. And
now, think about what would happen if a parent decided to push this the way that pastors in as a group of 1,500 churches were going to press the tax exempt. How many parents are going to say, all right, on such and such a date, we're going to take our kids to reformative therapy? Well, it's not going to happen.
Yep.
And what parent is going to say, you know what, I can risk not seeing my children for a year waiting for my trial date?
They're not.
No.
They're not.
No.
And because the state has the right, Bill, to kick your door in and take your kids out, and they don't even need a warrant to do that. Now think about that. They don't even have to appear before a judge, Bill. They can go to the school system to where your child is being educated, and you show up at 3 o'clock to pick up your child, and the high school principal calls you and lets you know, I'm sorry, that the state is already being in, and you can't even figure out where they're at.
Mm.
Can you imagine the turmoil that you would be in on that given day, Bill?
That would be horrific. And we see it.
And it happens.
That is how revolutions get started.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this political party wants to give the government more power.
Hmm.
Buy a firearm.
That's a fact. Turning back government overspending and avoiding debt that we cannot repay versus reckless spending that threatens to bankrupt our children and our nation. Well, again, there's a horse that we've shot several times. Caring for the poor by reducing taxes to leave more money in the job-creating private sector versus ever-increasing taxes that drain money from job-creating businesses.
I don't think that people understand that concept, Bill. I don't think that they understand that at the local dry cleaners where I drop off at Anderson on Cliffdale Road, and there's a retired staff sergeant there, and he married his wife from Korea, and the two of them work 6 days a week, Bill, 12 and 13 and 14 and 15 hours a day, and he tells me of the tremendous tax burden he has. And he tells me I would hire other employees to bring some relief to my wife and I who have been doing this job 6 days a week for almost 20 years since he retired. He's put three kids through college. All of them are doing well. All of them have good jobs. I mean, we're dealing with the perfect example of small business. And his tax burden is outrageous, Bill. And he says, I would hire another employee if I paid less taxes. But the government doesn't seem to understand that the present model is that if he would hire another employee, that employee would have money, and they would spend sales tax, they would
income
buy things, income tax,
yeah.
And on and on, and that's the way it works. But we're shutting down small businesses. The Cliffdale Cleaners right around the corner from the church just closed down.
Right.
We're shutting down small businesses, making it more and more difficult for them to exist. And there's no end to this.
I know as an electrician in my former life that the code got thicker every issue. The code got thicker to the point where you have to specialize just so you can determine whether or not the conduit you're using in this commercial building, how do you stay on top of the laws and regulations? And it's not just safety. That's not just the issue.
Right.
You've got producers of certain types of materials that benefit from certain lawmakers.
Yep.
I mean, for every law that passes through Congress, there's a stack of exemptions.
Right. Absolutely. Dennis Brewer out in Rayford, Bill, runs a small business. He runs a body shop. And he was walking me through his body shop, and he was showing me all the safety requirement things that he has to have. He has to have a monthly contract with somebody to come and empty out chemicals that aren't even there because he's such a small business that he doesn't produce enough of the waste to dispose, and yet he has to have a contract. So the guy literally drives there and does nothing, and he pays him and drives away. But because of the regulations, he has to have this. This is money, Bill, that he pays that he shouldn't have to pay, that he could give to the church, that he could hire another employee, that he could give to a food bank, that he could do any number of things. But the government regulations in his small business are increasing greater and greater, month by month, year by year, to the point at which it's going to be almost impossible for him to stay in business. And we could go on and on. Those are just two examples in my life. Others could email in with many other examples. Think about the requirement to provide health insurance now for small businesses, Bill, where they can't afford to provide health insurance. And so they choose not to employ people because they cannot afford the full package that's required.
Imagine how we could benefit some small construction companies or land clearing if we had the authority to clear our own 5.5 acres behind the academy.
No, we can't. I mean, we need a soccer field desperately, yeah. and another sports area, and the rules are so restrictive. Bill, it would probably cost us $1 million.
Just to clear our own land. And probably 10 years. Because our paperwork, our surveys, our soil erosion plans have to go through county level, state level, EPA, and the federal level. Just so that we can clear anything more than 1 acre at a time. And so many have said, why don't you just clear 0.95 a year until it's... Okay, maybe. But the point is, it's whose land is it?
Exactly. Whose land is it? Exactly. It's their land for all practical purposes, Bill. When they create so many restrictions that limit what you can do on it, it becomes their land.
Right. And then we're moving on to strong military to protect us in the many small democracies that look to us for protection versus damaging defense cutbacks that leave smaller nations, the world's sea lanes, and our own nation increasingly vulnerable. And this is heartbreaking.
Well, this is us, Bill. This is Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Sure is.
This is Fort Bragg. This is us. We're going to feel this. We're already feeling it. Norbert White has lost his job, and I could go on and on. These are legitimate things that are happening. Bill, think about what you know about the number of people that were on the security gates on Bragg as private contractors. Now when you drive on post, all
it's
you
soldiers,
see
right?
is soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Those soldiers are not training anymore, Bill. They're standing at a gate. The reason there was a civilian security person there before was because they understood that standing at a gate 8 hours a day is not getting you ready to do your job better overseas in a combat environment. But because of the budget cutbacks, so that we can have more people on food stamps sitting at home doing nothing, we have soldiers at a gate. See, they don't understand the repercussions of these things. Increase entitlement spending so that more people can do nothing and collect a paycheck from the federal government, whereby those who were willing to work by being civilians on a gate so the soldiers could do their craft now aren't able to do it. And so, don't tell me there's not a difference between the political parties.
All right, then we go on to a commitment to stand by Israel versus snubbing its leaders and demanding that it make ever greater concessions. I was astounded when I looked at a map on, I think, Fox News, where it said that we had enemies of America. And except for Saudi Arabia, every Arabic nation, I think, except for maybe Oman, there was one south of Saudi and then Saudi, but that were hostile to America. And then you look, and there's this little strip of land on the eastern shore of the Mediterranean. Yep. And you're thinking to yourself, God must surely have his eyes on that piece of land. Because if it were not for a sovereign Jehovah God, they would have been dumped into the sea a long time ago.
Yeah, Bill, it is amazing. This is a separate issue, but we need to go ahead and talk about it for just a moment to educate our listener. Probably one of the greatest apologetic proofs of the existence of God is the people of Israel, Bill.
That's a fact. The existence of Israel, and also a proof of the soon second coming. The fact that they are to be the welcoming party, so to speak. Revelation 1:7 says that they will mourn, those who pierced them will mourn when they see him coming in the clouds. Well, that means that he has a particularly localized return point. And you pointed out in a recent sermon, I pointed out in a podcast this morning, that he is to return to the Mount of Olives, and he will be seen by the tribes of that land, and they will mourn because they pierced him. So the fact that they exist is no doubt a reference to the second coming. It's a proof of the existence of God, who promised that Israel was the apple of his eye, and that he would preserve the people of Abraham and David and it really is a sweet reality.
The fact that they are kept by his power is evidence that he is powerful and that he exists.
And that he's gracious. Romans 11, you know, blindness is in part to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come. And you know, part of those Gentile nations are the Arabs. And there's coming a day when the enemies of Israel will take a knee. So how can anybody be silent when this much is at stake? And he goes on and says, I emphasize the difference between the two parties because in America today, people in reality are voting for the party more than for the candidate. Laws today are not passed by individuals, but only by one political party or the other, under the leadership of that party's elected officials. And the national leaders of the two parties are more deeply committed than they have ever been to vastly opposite views on these moral issues. Do you think that's true? Do you think that they are so, let's just take the Republican Party. Do you think that they are predictable on moral issues as much as this author is saying?
Bill, they have to be predictable. And the reason they have to be predictable is they will go out of existence if they're not.
Yeah. They become absolutely, they become a moot point, don't they?
Absolutely. The greater degree to which the Republicans become more like the Democrats, the greater degree to which we do not need the Republicans.
Do you think we'll ever see the rise of a third party because of a desire for thinking people? Because that's really what it comes down to.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's great potential if the Republican Party does not continue to align itself with the evangelical conservatives. There's great potential for a true conservative party to emerge and begin to exercise some form of influence.
Okay. Americans need to choose which set of positions best represents their view and then vote for the candidates in the party that represents that column. That is what I will recommend this Sunday, but I will name names.
All right, he's going to name names on Sunday. I'm looking forward to finding out where. If you're a listener and you know where Wayne Grudem is speaking and what pulpit he's occupying, would you please email me at pastor@berean.org. That's B-E-R-E-A-N, baptistchurch.org. We would love to know. And I would say, Bill, that we need to consider registering unaffiliated. People need to leave the Democratic Party. So I'm not going to become a Republican. Fine. But your very registration to the Democratic Party is a silent endorsement, a standing silent endorsement to same-sex marriage, Planned Parenthood as a leading provider of abortions, and on and on and on.
Oppressive federal regulation, right. Jurisdiction, legislation from the bench.
Right, and yeah. You just go on and on.
Right.
So your yes. registration to that political party is a silent endorsement that I am part of that party. I mean, you can't say I'm a Democrat, but.
No.
No, you need to go ahead and you're not going to change it.
No.
You know, Adrian Rogers stayed in the Southern Baptist Convention with a view of changing the Southern Baptist Convention.
Right.
Okay? And made an impact. You're not going to change the Democratic Party, all right? It's too big of an organization. We're not going to have that happen, okay? It's like staying in the Episcopal Church bill and saying you're going to turn the Episcopal Church around to be conservative. It's done. It's finished. You know, Martin Luther wasn't able to change the Catholic Church bill. All right, you're not going to change the Democratic Party. They're on a train going in that direction, and they're not going anywhere but away from the things of God.
Want to put in another plug for your recording from that African-American gentleman who talked about that how the Democratic Party is not pro-black.
Right, that was Bishop E.W. Jackson. That was Bishop E.W. Jackson. It's a five-minute clip. You can Google it on YouTube in a minute and watch it. If you haven't watched it on YouTube or listen to the podcast, do that. He makes a strong case, Bill.
Right. Right. He sure does. And then there's also the idea probably out there, folks, thinking that the Democratic Party is more for women, but that cannot be. When you are pro-abortion, you have said, I put my stamp of approval on the killing of over 25 million women in the last 40 years in their mother's womb. So they are not pro-women. They are not pro-black. They are anti-God. They are very
well, the current president, Bill, the current president says that he is a pro-African-American. I say that hogwash. African-Americans are aborting their own babies at a greater percentage than any other ethnicity or race on the planet. And you're saying that you're pro-African-American? African-Americans are having babies out of wedlock more than any other race in America. You're pro-African-Americans unemployed at a greater percentage. African-Americans drop out of high school at a greater percentage. African-Americans do not finish college degrees at a greater percentage. And I have not seen or heard the president address any of those five issues.
And the concerning thing is the reason he's not going to is because if he can keep them dependent on government, he has their vote. It's just that simple. He's trying to get more and more voters from that community because if they are benefiting from his policy or lack thereof, they'll continue to vote for him.
That's right, but when your ethnicity, when your race, Bill, is aborting babies at a greater percentage than any others, you're decreasing in size.
Of course.
The African-American influence in America is decreasing. It's not increasing.
Mm.
When African-Americans are dropping out of college and dropping out of high school at a greater percentage than any other race, you're losing influence. You're not gaining influence. When you are not getting jobs more than anyone else, you're losing influence. You're not gaining influence. And so the fact that he's the first black president is almost meaningless because he has not impacted his own race. And I know that's controversial, but show me where I'm wrong. Listener, show me where I'm wrong. Show me where he has addressed these issues, and he's trying to use the bully pulpit that God has given him as the president of the United States to impact his own ethnicity, which needs the greatest change of course. Well, thank you so much for listening. Thanks, Bill, for coming by and helping me put together a good analysis, I hope, of this article. I think Grudem has done a favor to us, and I hope many of you will listen to this podcast and you would recommend it to others who are struggling with what am I going to do with my political affiliation, and who am I going to vote for in about 4 weeks. Bill, any last thoughts?
Only that Wayne Grudem is analogous to the Adrian Rogers. He's got a voice. He uses it. They're analogous to Queen Esther. Mordecai said, use your position to say something meaningful. You're going to die one day, and so if it's over this cause, then do it.
Absolutely.
So use your voice that you have. If God's giving you an arena, an avenue, then use it for the glory of the Lord.
Thanks for listening. Have a great day.